Hello, and welcome once again to a MANCAD, British Academy of Audiology podcast. As you probably know, MANCAD stands for Manchester Centre for Audiology and Deafness, and we're located at the University of Manchester in the UK. I'm Gabby Saunders, I'm a Senior Research Fellow at MANCAD, and I moderate our podcasts. We address topics that are important to the practice of audiology, and they're important and relevant to audiologists, researchers, and really anyone who's interested in hearing and hearing loss. We record a new podcast each month. They last about 20 minutes, and we put the audio recording along with the transcript on our MANCAD University of Manchester web pages. On to today, Anisa Visram from MANCAD is going to be discussing babies and hearing aids, why parents struggle, and how to help. She's knowledgeable about this topic because she and her colleagues have done a study here at Manchester. Anisa is a research fellow in audiology, and her research interests include clinical practice in pediatric audiology, auditory evoked potentials, and improving outcomes with hearing aids. Before we start our conversation, I'm going to pass you over to Anisa, who will tell you a little bit more about herself. Anisa.
Great, thank you very much for having me. I started out in audiology by doing my PhD here in Manchester quite a few years ago now. And after that, I moved on to North Wales, where I did my clinical training to become a clinical audiologist, and then worked in North Wales as a paediatric audiologist. So after that, I moved back to Manchester, and that's where I've been for the last 5 years, working as a researcher here in MANCAD, looking at various different projects with a focus on clinical paediatric audiology.
Well, thanks. And it's really, we're lucky to have you here. So today we're going to be talking about a study that Anisa and her team conducted, look at some of the challenges faced by parents of deaf babies when it comes to maintaining hearing aid use. So Anisa, can you first set the scene for the study?
Yes, of course. So we know that about 1 in 1,000 babies are born with permanent hearing loss, and mostly they're born to parents who do have hearing. So this means that the whole idea of hearing aids and hearing loss is very new to the parents. The other thing that we know is that consistent hearing aid use is really important for these kids to make sure that they're getting quality language input and then developing language skills. So really, what that means is that we need three things. We want the kids to be wearing their hearing aids all waking hours. We need to make sure the hearing aids are set up properly so they match the child's hearing loss well. And then just to make sure the kids are getting really good quality language input. And if we can achieve all these things, then we know that the kids are getting everything they need for good language development, and they won't be at a disadvantage compared to their peers with normal hearing.
All right, so that sounds pretty straightforward. So what's the issue?
So the parents in reality face quite a lot of challenges around getting their kids to wear hearing aids all waking hours. We know from previous studies that young children are probably only wearing their hearing aids an average of around 4 to 5 hours a day. And we also know from previous studies that generally hearing aid use tends to increase with age. So as the parents get into better routines, as the children are awake for longer, all these sorts of things contribute to increasing hearing aid use. But we also know that consistent hearing aid use from the very beginning is really important for language development. So this is why we want to help support parents from a really, really early age to maximize the number of hours the kids are wearing the hearing aids. And the first really important thing is about trying to understand more about the challenges those parents face.
Yeah, so what did you do then to look at this?
So we designed a study where we were using survey data and asked parents about their experiences at two different times. So first off, we asked them when the babies were quite young, soon after the hearing aids were fitted. So they were about 3 to 7 months old. And went back and surveyed the parents again a few months later to see how things had changed. And we also looked at how many hours a day the babies were wearing their hearing aids using hearing aid data logging. One of the really good things about the study is that we were able to travel around the UK to collect the data. So we actually recruited families from 53 different trusts all around the UK. So it's a really, really representative sample. We kind of know that we're getting to the important issues.
No, that's really impressive to collect so much in-depth data. So what were the key findings?
Well, one of the really interesting things we found was that hearing aid use actually decreased over time for these babies. So they were using the hearing aids less when they were that little bit older than when they first had them fitted. And that's despite the fact that as the kids are a little bit older, they'll be awake for longer. And so in terms of the effect of the percentage of waking hours that they're wearing them, that effect of the decrease over time is even stronger.
Well, that's really surprising, considering you said earlier studies have shown kind of the opposite, that daily hearing aid use increases with age. So why do you think your findings were different?
Yes, so it was interesting, and we were seems to be one of the first studies to have found that. So when we looked a bit closer, one of the things we found was that the effect was strongest for the children with more profound losses. So children with worse hearing loss were more likely to show a reduction in hearing aid use than those with milder losses. So we don't know exactly why this is, but we can make a couple of educated guesses. So it might be because the parents just felt that the hearing aids weren't giving any benefit. A lot of the kids with the more profound losses will be on waiting lists to get cochlear implants. So perhaps the parents are just thinking the hearing aids are no use, we'll wait for the cochlear implant. So that was one issue. A second thing is that we did notice that the parents reported slightly different things when the kids were really young and when they're a bit older. And one of the things that they always highlighted when the kids were a bit older was that they were having more and more problems with the kids pulling the hearing aids out of their ears. So that's one really obvious barrier to hearing aid use that did seem to get worse as the kids got slightly older.
Gosh, yeah, they both sound different, but problems. What could you do?
Yeah, exactly. They definitely are problems, but they are things that we think that we can sort of understand and address better. So for the kids with profound losses, you know, some people may be tempted to say, well, they're not hearing anything, what's the point, does it matter? But actually, we kind of know it really does. We still really want to be encouraging these kids to wear the hearing aids as much as possible. We know that even any tiny little bit of sound that gets through is going to help to just make sure the your auditory pathways in your brain are stimulated. And that just means that when they do go on to have cochlear implants, they're going to have better outcomes. So it's still really important for those kids with profound losses. We've kind of looked at other issues around hearing aid use. One of the things we have done is, in a separate survey, we've been asking parents about their experiences recently during COVID lockdown. And that's been really interesting in that it suggested about a third of children seem to be wearing their hearing aids less during lockdown when they're not going to school. So this could be another kind of just pertinent issue right at the moment, which is just adding in extra difficulty for parents trying to achieve consistent hearing aid use. And as I've kind of said before, for all kids, all degrees of hearing loss, all ages, we know that if they're just not using the hearing aids, then the quality language is not getting through, getting to their brain, and it's just gonna lead to slower development of language and of education. So it's really important.
Yeah, and I guess getting that message across to the parents who think, okay, my child's profoundly deaf, they need a cochlear implant, why bother? I could see that could be a huge, huge barrier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Were there any other major findings that you want to share from the study?
Yes. So we did find, reassuringly, there were certain things that parents were good at. So basic hearing aid management skills like changing batteries, inserting ear molds, they were really, really confident with those things. So that's great. But there were some things that they struggled more with. So the more complex skills of sort of troubleshooting hearing aids, doing hearing aid listening checks, they just weren't as confident with. We also asked parents to tell us about what information they wish they had had that they didn't, or where they kind of felt they were lacking information. So what they said was, in the early days, it was really information about cleaning the hearing aids and about doing listening checks. So they were the things that they felt they were just lacking complete information on soon after the hearing aids were fitted. And then when we went back and asked them a few months down the line, the focus was more about keeping the hearing aids in the ears of the children and about things like the sort of higher skills, like how to retube ear molds. So the information needs did change over time. They also told us about specific barriers to using hearing aids. We've already spoken about one of them being pulling the hearing aids out. There were also some factors that were based around the hearing aids themselves. So things like lots of feedback or hearing aids not working properly, and other factors that were more around personal circumstances. So things like distractions of other children in the home or difficulty getting into a routine. So we learned quite a bit about what kind of barriers the parents have got to hearing aid use.
I guess it's interesting to me because, you know, I'm more familiar with adult rehab, and it seems like it's very much the same. The adults, you know, new hearing aid users can do the basic skills, but the troubleshooting, etc. So maybe that says that audiology as a field needs to figure out better ways to explain some of that to everybody. It's not specific to older adults. It's not specific to parents of young children. It's a broader problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really interesting that a lot of the findings that we have, you know, we've been very focused on pediatric audiology in children, but you're absolutely right that some of it will extend out and just be relevant to new hearing aid users of any kind.
Okay, now earlier you talked about the fact that most babies born with permanent hearing loss have hearing parents, and so the parents know very little about hearing loss. Sounds like a major problem, but I guess something that planning and counselling can overcome. Can you talk more about that?
So one of the big challenges is that you're trying to get across a lot of important information about hearing and hearing loss to these parents at a time when they're likely to be feeling perhaps a little bit confused, perhaps a little bit vulnerable. So we did ask parents a little bit about their experiences of receiving information at this time. And about a third of parents said that they felt overwhelmed by the information given them in the audiology clinic about hearing loss and hearing aids. So it's something just to be sort of sensitive towards. Now, whilst a lot of them did feel overwhelmed, most of them, but not all of them, still said they wanted to get the information, all of it, straight away from the beginning. So it was 85% of parents that said that. So that's kind of interesting in itself, in that it still means that perhaps sort of one in six or seven parents actually maybe would benefit from getting the information gradually. So you're just sort of being aware of the difficulties the parents may be under emotionally at that time, and the different experiences that might be appropriate for them in the clinic. So we also asked them about what extra information they would have wanted at this time of hearing about the baby's hearing loss. And the specific things they said was they wanted more information to understand exactly what their babies could and couldn't hear, more information about peer support, and more information about the ongoing management plan. And those are all things that actually we can address. So, you know, there are things like hearing loss simulators. A lot of hearing aid fitting software will include hearing loss simulators, or you can get some just simple online implementations. You can look them up on YouTube, and that can be just really great for helping parents understand. And there are loads of local and national support groups. So NDCS is one that has them sort of all over that can be really great. So just providing parents with that information, and then just clear written information about the ongoing plan helps to make sure they don't necessarily have to take everything all at once, but they've got information to refer back to. So we kind of know a bit about how we can get information across to parents, but we also know just because they receive that relevant information, they may not necessarily go on to develop the necessary skills in hearing aid management. And just because they have the skills, they may not always put them into practice. It's not always as simple as that. So often there may be just broader, wider barriers in terms of what their personal circumstances are and what their beliefs and motivations are. So it may be something just more deeper than what's on the surface that's stopping them from using the hearing aids as much as we would like.
Yeah, and have you thought about solutions for that kind of problem?
Yeah, so first off, we make efforts to make sure they have the right skills and knowledge. And we've spoken about a lot of those things already. One thing perhaps I would add is that the benefit of repetition, because we know people don't always take everything in the first hearing. And also just checking in with parents over time to make sure that you're addressing any gaps in their knowledge and skill set. But we know that's not always enough. We need to make sure that parents have belief in their abilities to use the hearing aids, and that they understand the importance of using hearing aids so that they're motivated to actually do it. And that really requires specific and personalized interventions. And we think we can use evidence-based behavior change techniques to develop these interventions to get some really good outcomes. So luckily enough, we have a project underway at the moment, funded by NDCS, looking at this. So our postdoc, Kira Kelly, is actually working on it now. So she's going to be collecting some interviews and questionnaires from parents and hearing professionals to help better understand what the barriers are to hearing aid use, and then using that to design and test interventions to help parents maximise the amount of hearing aid use right from the start, so right from when their children are first diagnosed and fitted with hearing aids.
Okay, I'm just going to ask you in a minute to talk about the intervention, but just before I do, I just want to say that for those who aren't aware, NDCS stands for National Deaf Children's Society, is that correct?
That's right, yes.
Okay, so this intervention that you're talking about, can you tell us a bit about that and what you think it'll be?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I suppose the first thing is that we don't exactly know what it will be yet, because that's what the groundwork of exploring the barriers is about. But we do know there's been a similar sort of intervention described recently in the literature in a paper by Ambrose et al. 2020. So they described an intervention aimed at parents and toddlers with low hearing aid use. And what they did was develop a personalised intervention whereby they first did interviews with the sort of structured interviews with the parents to find out exactly what their personal barriers were, and use that to build in these interventions, just really quite personalized and addressing the specific issues concerned, whether it was negative beliefs, whether it was a lack of self-belief. And they actually showed real success. So they had three parent-child participants in the study, and they all showed increased hearing aid use, and that use we do know did persist at least 1 month after the study, though it wasn't sort of tested further than that. So we'll probably be using some similar aspects from that kind of intervention, but there are some differences as well. So one of the things is that intervention was quite intense. It involved home visits over several weeks. So one of the things perhaps we might want to do is to look at something where we're able to perhaps reduce or sort of increase the scope of participation and making sure that it's something kind of viable to put into practice. So perhaps using things like remote practice to do some of the sessions. And the other important thing is that we're really trying to target the parents when their children are younger, so soon after hearing aid fitting. So we just get straight in there with these good habits that the parents can get into. And we also want to make sure we follow it up over a slightly longer time span so that we know if the benefits persist.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, so when is that going to start, you know?
So Kira has been on the project already for the last few months, so she's well underway, and we'll probably be getting in touch with some hearing professionals soon to get some input for this. So it's happening now.
Very exciting. So I just want to go back to something, because you sort of alluded to it, and I know there's a bit more behind it. You talked about traveling around the country to collect some data in that first study. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that? Because I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so really this study with the survey data was kind of a bit opportunistic because we were traveling around to visit families for a different study where we were looking at doing aided EEG, so either cortical evoked potentials or auditory steady state responses. So this is essentially for babies who are 3 to 7 months old wearing hearing aids, trying to find out if we can use objective techniques to see if the hearing aids are working appropriately and if the kids are hearing speech through their hearing aids. So because we're sort of trying to access a real sort of wide range of kids, we ended up with this project where we built a mobile research unit, so a van with a soundproof booth in the back that we could drive to families' homes to go and do the testing outside their homes. So what that meant was it improved sort of participation. You know, we've already said that these parents are under huge amounts of stress, and you know, they've got different priorities in their lives with young babies. So being able to just sort of park up outside their house meant it was a lot easier for them to take part. And we just realised that accessing these kids from all over the country, we had the opportunity to get a bit of extra value and get a bit of information about how the parents were coping with hearing aids at the same time.
You know, Oh, that's really wonderful. And I understand there are new plans for this vehicle as well.
Yes, that's right. So we've recently had some funding to look at a project investigating persistent auditory consequences of COVID. So people may have seen in the media some attention has been given to the possibility that one of the long-term consequences of COVID could be effects on the auditory system. And so we're going to be looking at that in a lot more detail. So the idea is to recruit 100 participants who have had COVID and 100 participants who have not had COVID, who have been hospitalized over the last year, and do a whole bunch of different hearing tests on them to try to delve into if there is a long-term effect on hearing, and if so, what parts of the auditory system are affected. So that's going to be underway very, very soon, and it's just really exciting and really important question.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Okay, so now just before we end, what is the key message you'd like listeners to take away from this podcast?
So I guess the key things are, first off, keeping hearing aids in children's ears is hard work for parents, especially when it's new to them. So we start off by appreciating that. And then also acknowledging that it is still important to keep hearing aids on kids' ears. So it's worth putting the effort in to try to make sure that it's done. And this means not just making sure that parents have the knowledge and skills to manage hearing aids, but also looking at the broader challenges affecting them. So this could be about beliefs and personal circumstances. Maybe they just think the hearing aids don't help, or maybe they think it's not that important, I've got other priorities. So really discovering what those broader issues are and addressing them in an individual way, that's what's going to lead to more consistent use, and we know that's what's going to lead to better outcomes for those children.
Yeah, it's a really important message. So let's hope that we can change behaviors and it seems to me that it probably comes down to an understanding on the part of the parents that their behaviors have consequences down the line that they may be unaware of.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we think using these sort of behavior change techniques can just be a really good way to understand it and address it. And it just really it just it's just supporting parents, really.
Yeah, well, thank you, Anissa, for your time and sharing your thoughts. So, to those listening, we'll put a transcript of this recording on our website. And I just want to say that we will add a list of the references that Anissa referred to in that transcript. If you want to ask follow-up questions or give us feedback or share ideas about other topics for podcasts, please send me an email. My email is on the front page of the ManCab website. When we have our podcast, and it'll be in the transcript. And I hope you enjoyed discussion and come back to hear the next podcast, and we'll get the word out when the next one will be available. So thank you.